social slime. They don't matter, genocide. Sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. Censorship, force of air. Fuck them back, it's only for they bomb. They shoot, they kill, they massacre, rape. They burn the kids, no one makes gun. Trees, lie to your face, fight and die. Cause God forgive. Buying time, killing people next in line. Lower classes, social slide. They don't matter, genocide. Sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. See the shit, force of air. Fuck them back, that's only fair. They bomb, they shoot, they kill. They massacre, rape, they burn. The kids, no more things. Cut trees, lie to your face. Fight and die, cause God forgives. Yeah. Back around again.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens. This is Rock the Boat right here on UZY.TV, my favorite little online network. Lots of good hosts on it. Good, solid little platform. And Jules that runs it does a marvelous job. So, anyways, today's the 8th of March. The snow was gone, but now it's back. And we had a robin in our yard about four or five days ago, big fat robin, and I don't know what happened to him. He's probably going, boy, did I mess up. I don't know what he's up to. Anyways, this is interesting because I'm going to get to make a phone call tomorrow morning to... the Ridgeway Herald. I'm going to call them tomorrow and have a little fun with them. Apparently, this Mike Kulcher, or Kulcher, I guess. I posted a Facebook article to Crystal Beach. This is near Fort Erie somewhere. And Mike Coltier, who is a team member of the Ridgeway Herald, apparently, said that I'm fucked in the head. That's what he said. He left a note. And I can't respond to him because I'm back in Facebook jail again. So I just tracked the guy down and saw where I posted it, which was Crystal Beach. Crystal Beach, yeah. It's the village of Crystal Beach, Ontario, Political Views. But apparently the guy from the Ridgeway News took offense to what I posted and said that I am fucked in the head. Well, we're going to have a little chat with his newspaper in the morning. So what I posted was a piece from the United Nations Foundation.org, and it was about their organizational partners. And I don't know what he found to be so difficult to understand other than, and it really just kind of disheartening because this is an independent newspaper. And you would kind of hope that an independent newspaper would do what an independent newspaper is supposed to do, and that's shine the light, hold feet to fire, all that kind of stuff. But apparently not. So what I write, I want each of you to go through the list of partners of the United Nations Foundation and understand the evil you are looking at. In the list is the Club of Madrid, founded by ex-PM, Prime Minister, Kim Campbell, conservative. Go to the Club of Madrid and take a look at the other members. Well, everyone that's a member of the Madrid Club is either an ex-president or an ex-prime minister, all pushing the UN agendas. And there's a horde of them, including John Krejci and Bill Clinton and Gro Brundtland of Our Common Future and so on and so forth. There's just a horde of them. Anyways, the Global Fund, which is one of these partners of the United Nations Foundation, the Global Fund, was given $780 million of our, or your, tax money by Tinkerbell Trudeau, the liberal prime minister of the so-called country at the moment. But the Global Fund funds the Clinton Foundation. And Bill Clinton is a member of the Club of Madrid. So, you know, if you do any research at all, you find that these people show up everywhere together in different clubs, different organizations. I mean, it's a very small group of people, really. But what you find is that it's usually these foundations and these different clubs attached to the UN are all top ex-politicians. So people think when politicians get voted out, they just disappear. No. They got put in there in the first place for a reason, to move an agenda, and then once they get voted out, then they continue to work for the evil group of people that put them in power in the first damn place. But anyway, so I said the to the uninformed, most of the partners appear that they're doing good. The reality is they are conspiring to destroy nation states, drive people out of off the land into high density cities, ending in a mass depopulation agenda, which is all true. And then I wrote down here, we have a duty to drive the UN partners and anyone who supports their evil global agendas from our nations. Every level of government is involved. World War III is upon us, which it is. This is all true. It is a spiritual psychological war, which is true. A war we must win, which is true. We must take control of our nation, which is true. If we don't, our offspring have no future, and it will be our fault, which is true. So Mikey from the Ridgeway News, after reading this, I doubt he even went to the site, comes to the conclusion that I'm fucked in the head. So I'll be giving the Ridgeway News a call in the morning, see if I can catch up with Mikey. And I don't know, maybe I'll sue him for libel. That really ticks me off. But if you want to read this, you can just go to, it's posted on the Village of Crystal Beach, Ontario Political Views, that's their Facebook, or you can just go to Rock the Boat. Facebook, Rock the Boat Radio Facebook, and scroll down a little bit and you'll find it. And I can't do much about Mikey till I call him tomorrow, because I can't comment because I'm in Facebook jail again. And the funny thing about Facebook is when I did get out of jail this time, last time I was out for 2 minutes, and they put me back in. So this time when I got out, I just left it for a couple of days and didn't post nothing. And I actually got a message from Facebook that my site is fairly popular, and But I haven't posted anything lately. It would be a good thing if I posted something. So about a day or so after I got that notice, I posted something. And then shortly after that, I'm back in jail again. Just a brilliant outfit this Facebook is. It is one way to put stuff forward. Now, I want to thank Carl Fleury from, I forget what town he's in, but around Edmonton. He posted on my my personal site. I had posted a piece, a friend from up Sudbury way came up with all these cows, the communism cow, the socialism cow, and it gave her a real kick, and she really liked the Irish cow. So I looked at the cows and I thought, well, I can tie this into the problem that Michael Schmidt's having right now. They're trying to raise money. They have a GoFund up. You can go to support Michael Schmidt. They have a GoFund hooked up. They're trying to raise $100,000. They want to take another run at this constitutionally, which I'm not really that up on. I'm going to go through these cows. It's two cows. And it's explaining the different psychopathic ways that you are enslaved through different modes of government. So socialism, they start with socialism. It says you have one cow, or you have two cows, you give one to your neighbor. And then it goes to fascism. You have two cows. The state takes both and sells you some milk. The bureaucraticism, you have two cows. The state takes both, shoots one, milks the other, and then throws the milk away. Traditional capitalism, you have two cows. You sell one and buy a bull. That your herd multiplies. The economy grows. You sell them and retire on the income. Venture capitalism, which is really a nasty game that gets played on the people through government and that with their independent partners. And this reads out pretty good. Venture capitalism, you have two cows. You sell three of them. Now remember, you got two to start with, but this is venture capitalism. So you sell three of them to your publicly listed company using letters of credit opened by your brother-in-law at the bank. Then execute a debt equity swap with an associated general offer so that you get all four cows back with a tax exemption for five cows. The milk rights of the six cows are transferred via an intermediary to the Cayman Island Company, or to a Cayman Island Company, secretly owned by the majority shareholder who sells the rights to all seven cows back to your listed company. The annual report says the company owns eight cows with an option for one more. And that's really, it kind of spells out our government system here because, anyways, an Italian corporation, you have two cows, but you don't know where they are, so you decide to go have lunch. A French corporation, you have two cows, so you go on strike, organize a riot, block the roads because you want three cows. An American corporation, you have two cows, you sell one and force the other to produce the milk of four cows. Later, you hire a consultant to analyze why the cow has died. A Swiss corporation, you have 5,000 cows, none of them belong to you. You charge the owners for storing them. This is the one that really broke Dee up, who originally sent this to me. An Irish corporation, you have two cows. One of them is a horse. An Australian corporation, you have two cows, business seems pretty good, you close the office and go for a few beers to celebrate. Chinese corporation, you have two cows, you have 300 people milking them, you claim that you have full employment and high bovine productivity, you arrest the newsman who reported the real situation. An Indian corporation, you have two cows, you worship both of them. an Iraqi corporation, everyone thinks you have lots of cows. You tell them you have none. Nobody believes you, so they bomb the crap out of you and invade your country. You still have no cows, but now at least you have a democracy. I like that one, because that nails it on the head. Spreading democracy. A British corporation, you have two cows, both of them are mad. A Greek corporation, you have two cows borrowed from French and German banks, you eat both of them. The bank calls to collect their milk, but you cannot deliver, so you call the IMF. The IMF loans you two cows, but you eat both of those. The banks and the IMF call to collect their cows and milk, but you wander off to get a haircut. And that's basically the different modes of slavery, really, that you can find yourself under. So I just wrote a little bit, and I put it up on Michael Schmidt's Support Michael Schmidt Facebook. So what I wrote there, I put these pictures in with it, and I just added a little bit to it to try to get people to understand just a little bit about what's going on. And what I wrote was that in Ontario, you own a herd of grass-fed, healthy cows. People want the milk, but if you deliver the milk to the people who want it, you end up in jail. Now, Michael's been fighting that for 25 years, and yes, he ended up in jail. They have beat them into ground for 25 years. Anyways, I went on to say that the state did not create the cows, the grass, the milk, or the men and women who wish to consume the milk. The state did, however, create the legal system, which is 180 degrees opposite of law. Time we all get back to law, enjoy our God-given rights, which come before and stand above any man-made legal privilege. Law is moral, legal is amoral, which is truth and fact. Now, I put that up on Michael's site, and they seem to be getting a fair bit of hits on it, which is nice, because the amount of money, the amount of time, the amount of effort, and I've been to Michael's lots and lots of times, and I mean, the walls are stacked floor to ceiling in two offices with just boxes and boxes. I mean, you take a room that's 14 by 16 or whatever, 14 by 18, and you ring the walls with legal cardboard document boxes and stack them to the ceiling. Total waste of time. Hundreds of thousands of dollars wasted. And still going nowhere quick. You know, now they put an injunction against them. And if they or anybody else tries to move any raw milk, they could end up in jail too sweet. The funny part is, though, that you can go across the border from Ontario into the United States, into New York, buy raw milk, and then transport it back across the border. But you can't do it here in Ontario because the Ontario government, like all governments, does not want any competition. And they're fearful that if they don't keep stomping on real food, real healthy food, nobody in 25 years has ever been ill in the slightest from drinking Michael's milk. A lot of people have gotten extraordinarily healthy from drinking his milk. But obviously the government is not concerned about your health. They're concerned about control, monopoly, on whatever they can get a monopoly on. Anyway, so that's that. Now, I have an interesting article. I think that's probably what got me in jail again. I'm just going to take a quick look here at the Ridgeway Herald here for a second. It says that it's let's see, here's their website, RidgewayHerald.com, and see what these clowns are up to. Let's see, trash collection delayed. That's a pretty poor looking, I guess it's this little independent paper though. Wheels come off 40 Erie Transit, that would be a problem for them. Woodbine gobbling up 40 Erie horses, $9 million mortgage fraud in Crystal Beach. Transit agreement extended without council's knowledge. Town bus crash into streetlight pole. Oh, well, nothing too exciting there. But I'm going to be calling them tomorrow and see who this Mikey guy is, because I'm not too impressed that someone who apparently works in media, instead of dealing with the reality of what we're facing, throws a remark out like that. Now, back to what I think got me thrown in jail again, was a piece. Yes, this is, yeah, okay, that was the last thing I put up. So, yeah, that's what got me thrown in jail. And then I see that they remove it from websites that I, or Facebooks that I posted it to. I mean, it's really pathetic. Truth is, it doesn't go well over Facebook. Anyways, I just put a piece in here. Welcome to the United Nations, a global tyrant that is immune from prosecution and taxes. Please read the entire text. It is only 4 pages. Time to run the tyrant and all who support it from our nations. All levels of government are conspiring with the UN tyrants. As long as the UN exists, there will be no freedom or peace on the earth, which is all true. So I don't know what people's problems are. Part of this thing here is, and again, you can go to Rock the Boat Radio, and I put a few songs by this Mean Mary, who's pretty damn talented. A lot of people never heard of her before. She's a very talented banjo player, guitar player, violin player, songwriter, singer. So I just threw a couple of her songs in there because I can't really post anything anywhere. So, but anyways, this is just a little bit of what I put on here, and I have a link to the PDF. And you all need to understand what it is. Okay, this all goes back to the divine right of kings. Okay, and you only had the right to rule if you stayed within the law, which is the word, which is what they took an oath to uphold. Now, once they move away from that oath, because it says in Deuteronomy somewhere, do not take away or add to my word, which is the law. So they had the right to rule as long as they stayed within the law. Once they moved out of the law, or away from the law, or added to, or took away from the law, they lost their right to rule. Now, they set up the divine right of kings as the proxies of Christ. And that was, that gave them dominion, okay? But only as long, this was the basis of government, only as long as they stayed within the law. Now, the Vatican, Catholicism, Rome, don't have the same game, right? Like the Pope is supposed to be the vicar of Christ, when in fact he's the vicar of the other guy. Okay? So they're nowhere near what they're supposed to be. This is why they have you worshiping the earth, not the Creator. Now, the Queen, who took an oath to uphold the King James Bible, there's a bit of an out in that, because the oath says we'll uphold the law or the word to the best of her ability. Okay? Now, in the old days, the title of king or queen was just an extension of the man or woman. Now, once the lawyers got involved in it, the attorneys, a turn is to turn from one lord to another, once these deceivers got involved, there was a separation of the man or woman and the title. Okay, so the title of king or queen became the corporate entity, which is all the legal system, all corporate. Okay, and so we've gone way off the rails ever since that happened, and we're still off the rails because we're nowhere near law anymore. We're in this legal system, which is adversarial system, which law is not adversarial. Legal is adversarial, and if you look up legal, you'll find the other guy, the amoral part of this game. So, but the Queen is an entity, and you can't sue unless they give you permission to sue. They're completely immune. Now, when you read through this, you get the same thing out of the United Nations. The Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of Specialized Agencies. The Convention's core provision with regard to immunity from jurisdiction is found in Article 2, Section 2, which runs as follows. The United Nations, its property and assets, wherever located, and by whomsoever held, shall enjoy immunity from every form of legal process, except insofar as in any particular case it has expressly waived its immunity. It is, however, understood that no waiver of immunity shall extend to any measure of execution. The General Convention has had a major impact on the development of subsequent treaties dealing with privileges and immunities of international organizations. Already on November the 21st, 1947, the General Assembly approved the Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of Specialized Agencies. It entered into force on December the 2nd, 1948, and applies to those United Nations-related international organizations that have entered into special relationship agreements with the United Nations pursuant to Article 63 of the Charter, such as the International Civil Aviation Organization, the World Health Organization, the Food and Agricultural Organization, the United Nations Educational Organization, which is UNESCO, Scientific and Cultural Organization, the International Monetary Fund, the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, and others. All are immune from legal prosecution. Now, the really sick part of this is, this way you call it tyrannical, and that's what it said way back when, that once the king or queen moved away from the law, they became tyrants. That's why you have the force of law, which is not, there's no force in law. Okay, it's force in legal. Okay, and legal comes from the word loyal. Well, who are these people loyal to? the creator? Obviously not. Okay? So they've sold their souls. Now, they've put themselves in a position that they are immune from legal action. Well, they're the ones that created the legal system. And these are the ones that write all the rules and regulations that you are forced to follow. They, who turned against the law, made themselves immune from prosecution, but write all the rules, regulations, statutes, of which you are not immune from. They write the legal jargon that makes you pay taxes. They write the legal jargon that makes you buy licenses, privileges from them, which is no different. None of this is any different than if you will go back to Catholicism, the Vatican, and Rome. All roads lead to Rome. So nothing has changed. Now, what exactly is the United Nations? Well, it's a bunch of bandidos, a bunch of tyrants that put themselves in a position of immunity and don't pay taxes and put everybody else in a noose. But who has, you know, the Vatican is not recognized as a nation state. So it can't be a member of the United Nations, but the Vatican has unrestricted observer status. So what you got is you got the Vatican that's watching everything that's going on and making sure that everything is going correctly. Now, in the 1500s, when Martin Luther went to Rome and figured out the ugliness of this place and the sin taxes and that were being applied against people, which is the exact same thing today. A traffic ticket is a sin tax. Okay? Simple as that. You didn't cause any harm, therefore you didn't break a law, but you sinned. Against who? Well, against them. So you have to pay. So nothing's changed. So during the Reformation, the people they figured Rome out, and they really did give it a swift kick in the nuts, and they really disempowered the Vatican Roman Catholicism. And the Geneva Bible spelled out specifically that the Vatican, the Pope, Rome, were satanic, evil. The Pope wasn't a vicar of Christ. He's a vicar of Satan or Lucifer, whatever you want to call him. There's only two entities here. There's good and there's evil, moral and amoral. There's nothing else. So this amoral outfit caused two world wars in order to get the United Nations into place. And in the process, killed hundreds of millions of people. And now they're coming after your ass. And it is important that we understand what's going on. And that we stand up to this. So, anyways, it's much easier if you just go to Rock the Boat Radio and just scroll down past Mean Mary there. A couple songs I put in. It's the next piece, and it has a link, because this is quite a drawn out leak link. It's legal.un.org, and then it just rattles on after that. So it's easier just to go to Rock the Boat Radio and get it from there, get the link from there. But this is called the United Nations Audiovisual Library of International Law Convention, right? By August Reinich, professor of international law at University of Vienna. When the United Nations was established, it was considered necessary that it should enjoy the status of a legal person under domestic law of its member states. Such a domestic legal personality is a prerequisite for international organizations to effectively manage numerous practical needs, such as procurement contracts, the acquisition of property, and the capacity to pursue its private law rights before national courts. The Charter of the United Nations only very generally responded to these needs by providing in its Article 104 that the organization shall enjoy in the territory of each of its member states such legal capacity as may be necessary for the exercise of its functions and the fulfillment of its purposes. What is its purpose? The destruction of nation states. A similar functional concept was adopted with regard to the question of the privileges and immunities of the United Nations should enjoy. Article 105, paragraph 1 provides that the organization shall enjoy in the territory of each of its members such privileges and immunities as are necessary for the fulfillment of its purposes, which is global slavery. The principle of functional personality as well as of functional immunity was thus firmly established in the founding document of the United Nations. However, these abstract rules required some more detailed explanation in order to become workable, helping United Nations officials as well as national judges to determine whether the United Nations should be considered capable of entering into a specific legal transaction or immune from a particular lawsuit directed against it. In a similar way, it was unclear to what extent United Nations officials as well as member state representatives to the United Nations should enjoy privileges and immunities. Article 105, paragraph 2, the drafters of the Charter of the United Nations again opted for a functional concept when it was stated therein, representatives of the members of the United Nations and officials of the organization shall similarly enjoy such privileges and immunities as are necessary for the independent exercise of their functions in connection with organizations. Now, up near the beginning of this paragraph here, however, these abstract rules, that's what legal is, okay? Legal is abstract concepts. And these lawyers, these deceivers, these users of jargon language, which is the language of the thieves used to deceive and gain advantage over others, is all based on abstract concepts, something made up in the mind, not reality, just something they made up. So then they had to work it through here, this abstract concept, so that it would fit into the legal realm. The time of the adoption of the Charter of the United Nations, there were not many legal instruments that could have served as examples for what was intended to be achieved. The Covenant of the League of Nations on June 28, 1919, merely provided for diplomatic privileges and immunities of its employees and the inviolability of its property. Only a subsequent agreement with the League's host state, the so-called modus vivendi, stipulated that the League possessed international personality and capacity and that it could not, in principle, according to the rules of international law, be sued before the Swiss courts without its consent. Now, we all ought to have the same rules. You know, a cop pulls you over and says, well, you were speeding. Well, I don't consent to the ticket. And it's all about consent. You know, and you have people on the road that say, I don't consent to this. And the cops don't seem to care about it. They just run over you anyways. You know, because they're just the foot soldiers for this criminal organization, this global criminal organization, of which every single nation is attached to, which means that every politician from your local level to the federal level is guilty of conspiring against you. But if they're doing UN work, they're immune from prosecution. So they can lie to you all they want. The media can lie to you all they want because the media is doing the same work. The preachers are doing the same work. The school teachers are doing the same work. And you're just supposed to roll over and forget about it. Let's see here. Entered into by the... it's not even in English. Entered into by League of Nations and the Swiss government 18th of September 1926. The OJLN 1926 Annex 911A 1422. Thus, the privileges and immunities of international organizations was largely uncharted territory. It was against this background that the Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of the United Nations, frequently referred to as the General Convention, was negotiated and adopted in the immediate aftermath of the establishment of the United Nations, as provided for in Article 105, Paragraph 3, the Charter of the United Nations. It was adopted by the General Assembly at its first session on February the 13, 1946, Resolution 22A1, on the basis of a draft of the United Nations Preparatory Commission. It entered into force September 17, 1946, and was registered with the Secretary General on 14th of December 46. It was one of the first treaties to be published in the United Nations treaty series. Anybody remember being taught any of this stuff in school? I didn't think so. The General Convention specifies the notion of functional personality and immunity of the United Nations and contains detailed provisions on the privileges and immunities enjoyed by the United Nations officials and member state representatives. Because of the high level of precision of the Convention's articles, they are considered directly applicable or self-executing in many national legal systems. That means that the national courts may directly rely on them without the need of national implementing legislation. So, this is way back, 1946. So, we're basically under international corporate law, which, when I was in the court in Walkerton, Ontario, and they had the guys, top guys from the Attorney General's office there, they had the top guys from the police there. These weren't just foot soldiers, these were high-end guys. And when I asked them, you know, is this a common law court or a corporate court? And the high-level, very well-dressed OPP, I think he was OPP, but he was definitely from the police, just looked at me and he said, it's all corporate, which is true. It's true. It is all 100% corporate, and it says so right here. That means that national courts may directly rely on them without the need of national implementing legislation. In Article 1, Section 1, the functional personality of the United Nations is defined as juridical personality, or juridical personality, encompassing the specific capacity, A, to contract, B, to acquire and dispose of immovable and movable property, C, to institute legal proceedings. This provision clarifies that the United Nations should be able to enter into day-to-day operations governed by private law. Okay? Private law. That's private law is outside of the legal system. So you're in the legal system, they're in the private law system. Wait a minute. Which is kind of odd, you know, because when Michael Schmidt, the milkman, was in court in Newmarket in 2010, and I attended that, he was found, he was acquitted on all, I think it was 19 charges or something that he was up on. For, producing and distributing and whatever, all about milk. But the justice in that case agreed that everyone has the right to enter into a private agreement or a private contract outside the meddling of the government. that was quickly taken up by the government, and they took him back to court because they don't want you to be in private law, because then you're outside. Like, the basically private law is if two parties agree, then they are taking responsibility. Okay? The government can't tell you what you can and can't drink, or what you can and can't eat, or how you can think. Although I did have the chief of police tell me that I was, my thought process was not the same as 99% of the community. But the fact is that any two men and women of legal age can enter into any private agreement, and the government has no business interfering in it. So the United Nations is able to enter into day-to-day operations governed by private law, but not you. The convention's core provision with regard to immunity from jurisdiction is found in Article 2, Section 2, and it runs as follows. The United Nations, its properties, assets, whatever located. Okay, that's what I put on my blog. The de facto absolute immunity of the United Nations is mitigated by the fact that Article 8, Section 29 of the convention requires the United Nations to make provisions for appropriate modes of settlement of disputes arising out of contracts or other disputes of a private law character to which the United Nations is a party. The General Convention's obligation to provide for alternative dispute settlement in case of organization's immunity from legal process can be regarded as an acknowledgement of the right of access to court as contained in all major human rights instruments. Private law contracts entered into by the United Nations regularly contain arbitration clauses in the case of tort claims, such as those resulting from harm suffered as a result of peacekeeping operations or vehicular accidents. The United Nations usually agrees on similar forms of dispute resolution. Staff disputes within the United Nations are settled by an internal mechanism in the form of the United Nations Administrative Tribunal, established in 1949. General Assembly Resolution 351A4 of 9th of December 1949. Now, this is like a private society. It's the same as a law society of Upper Canada. It's the same as your education system. It's the same as your political system. Where you get dragged into court, the United Nations and the legal system, are settled by an internal mechanism in the form of an administrative tribunal, same as doctors. Any society, it can be the architects, it can be anything, but it can't be you. Okay, you get your sorry ass dragged into court and flogged, where this other system that they have is basically private law, and they deal with it in-house, okay, in their house. And what they've done is they've taken over our house. And they've made us to submit to their rules in our house, which is completely not acceptable. Not in any way, shape, or form. Let's see. Judicial system with the United Nations Dispute Tribunal and United Nations Appeal Tribunal. In addition to immunity from suit, the General Convention provides for the the most important privileges conferred upon the United Nations by the General Conventions are fiscal ones. Most significantly, Article 2, Section 7 exempts the United Nations from all direct taxes, as well as from custom duties, quotas concerning goods for the United Nations official use. With regard to indirect taxes, the convention merely provides that in the case of important purchases for official use, the state concerned will make appropriate administrative arrangements for tax reimbursement. So even if they do pay the tax, they get it back. I read an article, I think it was, I'm not sure it was Poland or somewhere, where they were putting smart meters in. I read this years ago. And it was about the contractors. And the deal was that anybody contracting, it was the United Nations. I'm not sure it was Poland or it was some country that there was an agreement that other countries put up the money for the smart meters. And these things were being provided to the country. And again, I am sure I thought it was Poland. I could be wrong on that. But the gist of it is that they're telling the contractors that are going to install the smart meters not to add tax to their labor because the United Nations doesn't pay tax. Meanwhile, here in Ontario and Canada, we have this 13% HST tax. So everything you purchase, everything you purchase in this freaking country, except for basic food, you're paying 13% tax on it. And then that money's funneled over to the United Nations, a lot of it, or other United Nations entities and or directives and or missions. And so, you know, you're just being hammered. And we got to smarten up. We got to get our nation back. We got to get the United Nations out of our business. And we got to get back to law. Anyways, the General Convention further contains privileges and immunities for three categories of persons crucial for the work of the organization. One, representatives in member states. Two, United Nations officials. And three, experts on missions for the United Nations. While member state representatives enjoy modified diplomatic privileges and immunities, United Nations officials, i.e. permanently employed staff members, enjoy functional immunity, which is defined in Article 5, Section 18A, as immunity from legal process in respect of words spoken or written and all acts performed by them in their official capacity. Like, I just dropped a bomb on your family. Article 5, Section 20 stretches that the privileges and immunities are granted to officials in the interests of the United Nations and not for the personal benefit of individuals themselves, and the Secretary General has to waive the immunity of United Nations officials where it would impede the course of justice and can be waived without prejudice to the interests of the United Nations. In addition to judicial immunity, United Nations officials are tax exempt with regard to their salaries received from the United Nations and enjoy a number of other fiscal, travel, and residential privileges. Ooh. Only the Secretary General, Under Secretaries General, and Assistant Secretary Generals enjoy full diplomatic privileges and immunities, like they are the kings. As opposed to United Nations officials, experts on missions for the United Nations, like members of the International Law Commission, special rapporteurs, or members of the United Nations peacekeeping operations, serve under temporary and specific mandate. They also enjoy certain functionally limited privileges and immunities pursuant to Article 4 of the General Convention. And now you have a lot of these peacekeepers are out there raping people, just like the Vatican is raping the little boys. It's the same group. Remember, the Vatican has unrestricted observer status with the United Nations because that's where the United Nations came from. The evil upon this world. The General Convention has had a major impact on the development of subsequent treaties dealing with privileges and immunities of international organizations. Already on 21st November 1947, the General Assembly approved the Convention on the Privileges and Immunities of Specialized Agencies that entered into force on the 2nd of December 48 and applies to those United Nations-related international organizations that have entered into special relationship agreements with the United Nations pursuant to Article 63, which of the Charter, such as the World Health Organization, who controls your health, the Food and Agricultural, which that controls your food, education, UNESCO, which controls the education and the sex ed and the all the gay crap that's going on, and the cultural organizations, the International Monetary Fund, and who controls your money, and so on and so forth. So your country is not in any way controlled by the people in the country, and your politicians, okay, are all members, because each state, our nations, are member states of the United Nations. Okay? And we do as the treaties tell us to do. So, the last thing here, we're going to make this actually. Examples of similar privileges and immunities treaties are the General Agreement on Privileges and Immunities of the Council of Europe, 1949, and the Agreement on Privileges and Immunities of the Organization of American States, 1949. Numerous headquarters or seat agreements have also been influenced by the General Convention. Now, there's some whole bunch of related, there's some here, related materials, legal instruments, Covenant of the Legal Nations, and another League of Nations, Agreement on Privileges and Immunities, the Organization of American States, Washington, 1949, United Nations Treaty Series, Volume 1, 1438, page 79, General Agreement on Privileges and Immunities of the Council of Europe, Paris, 2nd of September, 1949, documents, General Assembly Resolution, February 46, General Assembly Resolution, December 49, and that's the United Nations Administrative Tribunal. The Doctrine, Legal Status, Privilege and Immunities of the Specialized Agencies, in The Hague, 1964. Boston, Intergovernmental Organizations, a Functional Necessity, Analysis of Their Legal Status and Immunities. That was Boston and London, 1994. International Immunities, 1961, London. International Organization Before National Courts, Cambridge University Press, Cambridge 2000. So anyways, you need to go to Rock the Boat Radio and just scroll down, hit the link, read this. If you have a lawyer friend or anything, I recommend you send it and ask, how is it that these people are immune? How is it they don't pay taxes? How is it they're running our nations and we are being forever deeper and deeper driven into slavery, international slavery? So, yeah, give that some reading, and we'll be back, I guess, on Sunday at noon, broadcasting to UCY.TV from Revolution Radio FreedomSlips.com. And remember, folks, this is a time to be, I don't know what the word is, excited. This is definitely not the time to be saying, oh, I guess we're screwed. No, because the information is everywhere now. We're not screwed. Get the knowledge. Keep talking, teaching, shining the light, and then we're going to stand. And we're going back to law. I mean, if the United Nations can use private law, then why in the hell can we not? Why are we still paying sin taxes? Okay, because we're still under the thumb of the Vatican and Rome, which is adversarial, which is basically satanic governance, of where you, and they've got all these people worshiping the earth now instead of the creator. It's ass backwards, folks. So it's time to rock the boat till we flip it right side up, kick Rome once more in the teeth, kick the United Nations in the teeth, and move them off our land, move them off the planet, Mars. I guess I got it coming.
Selling lies and buying time, killing people next in line, lower classes, social slime, they don't matter, genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money they don't care, censorship, force of air, fuck them back, it's only for the norm, they